Sense.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebick.com. An absolutely glorious upstate New York morning. As I staple past performances, there's a lot of good racing. There's some very attractive opportunities, and what do they say? It's that, what's the saying? It's not just for breakfast anymore. What was that ad? Not just for what was that case? Not just for breakfast anymore. I'm going to say the midweek. Not just an afterthought on racing days anymore. Yesterday, you know, the action in Indiana, and didn't pay, but it ended up being the chalkiest sequence so far. Better to hit it, make a little bit of money than to miss it. And the scratches hurt yesterday. And you know, we keep saying when it comes to the field size, it just affects everything. It's just so apparent. And yeah, you know, the three scratches out of that sixth race yesterday in the sequence, and two came out of the fifth, two came out of the seventh. So you know, you end up with a six-horse field in the second leg, five-horse field in the third leg, seven-horse field. You know, that hurts, and it depresses. I mean, obviously, it limits the number of multiples that, you know, are possible, and as a result, depresses the prices. And it's funny, when I put the ticket in and I was kind of looking, I'm saying to myself, you know what? There's just not going to be enough prices in the sequence to make, you know, to make the thing pay big money, or you know, the kind of money that you hope for when you're playing those sequences. But it's still fun to sit through and play it. Escuderia's Dream, very much the best, and pretty much everybody in that sequence that we talked about yesterday with Bill Downs came through. Happy that Malcolm Franklin gets off the duck with Crunch. My turn back candidate, Drink at the Creek, ran okay, ended up second, but Crunch had taken over and ran away from the field at that point. But Escuderia's Dream wins by open lengths. Naughty Alfred got bet, and this is the worst part about those scratches. That field ends up five horses, and you know, Bump Bailey came out, who was going to be, you know, 2-1, 5-2, and Nano and Soul Song, they all came out. And so, you know, even finding a horse like Naughty Alfred ends up being, you know, he ends up going off favored. He vied for favoritism with the Amos, A Song for You. Peppered and Lemon Blitz were all you needed, as kind of expected, in the fourth leg. And high marks for Declan Cannon in the anchor leg. And of course, there were two more. There were quarter horse races that followed yesterday after the Thoroughbreds. And Brendan Walsh's ship in, second choice, but 3-1. 820 was a terrific price. And one scratch in here, and then the the morning line was high, but Declan Cannon was bottled up on Amazima. I mean, you could see there was one point, I think, approaching the turn, and Cannon absolutely had his feet on the dashboard, and you could see that he was doing everything to keep from running up on heels with Amazima. And at least with Amazima's win, you ended up getting the best. You know, it was live to three horses, and at least got the best return on that front. So, you know, $86. Actually, if you played the All-A ticket, or if you pressed the A ticket, you know, which is one of the reasons the A's are laid out the way they are, that was okay, because the $18, you know, the $18 All-A's paid 4-1, essentially, if you play it that way. So, fun. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed digging in and kind of sitting there and just watching the, you know, Tina was making her way home from Rochester, so, and in fact, let me interject with a Tina returning from Rochester story. Forever, when we drive out in the country and in some, you know, remote areas like in Maine and up on the St. Lawrence Seaway and in the Adirondack Park, we've gone up to Lake Placid, etc., Saranac, and Tina has always been jealous that I've seen moose in the wild twice. Once when I lived in Montreal. Actually, I lived at the time in St. Adèle, north of Montreal, up in the mountains in the Laurentians. And the little condo that I rented in St. Adèle, it looked up at what was the name of that ski area? Oh, boy. I'm not going to remember it. I lived on Loup-Garou, which means crazy wolf, was the name of the street, leading down to the, I can't remember, unbelievable. That's awful, but I can't remember the name of that. It was also a golf course. Couldn't remember the name of the mountain. But anyway, one time I was on the phone with my mother, and literally a moose goes walking behind in the little valley that was between the condo complex and the ski area. I remember being on the phone with my mother saying, oh my God, there's a moose wandering by. It's incredible. And then as a kid, we would go up to a winter home, a ski chalet home, of a guy that my dad worked with, Charlie Stone, on Okemo. In Ludlow, which is not far. I mean, Ludlow's 45 minutes, you know, 55 minutes from here. And it was about midway up on the mountain at Okemo. And my dad and I went to go pick up a pizza in town in Ludlow. And we came around a turn, and a family of moose, a male and a female and a baby, are walking across the road. And it was the most amazing thing. I think I've told this story before. It was... The moose glowered at the car, my father and I in the car, and kind of stood there while his mate and the baby wandered by. It was unbelievable. I mean, the thing looked prehistoric, essentially, like a woolly mammoth, just huge. So anyway, so Tina has always wanted to see a moose in the wild, and last night was the night. And in fact, when Dick Powell joins us, because it had to be fairly close to where Dick lives, in Ballston Spa, in the Charlton, just between Charlton and Ballston, on the road from Amsterdam to Saratoga. And she called me so excited and was like beside herself. You're not going to believe it. She said, mommy moose and the baby moose along the side of the road. And at the last second, it looked like the moose was going to cross, Tina said. And she saw the car and she turned the other direction and the baby followed out of harm's way. But Tina was so excited to finally, and she's right here, to finally see Bullwinkle in the wild. So congratulations to Tina. Now the next thing she needs to see is a bear, which has become increasingly easy, because did you see the one the other day of the bear, the mom and the three baby bears on the children's swing set? Unbelievable. I mean, they're going to be moving into houses in neighborhoods soon. The bears are becoming so prevalent. Anyway, I was so excited for Tina to see the moose. So there's today's ridiculous Sidebar. Okay. Back to, I don't even know what I was, how did I even get off in that direction? Some other racing stuff. And Emerald, as we were kicking off their season yesterday, never got a chance to connect with Phil Ziegler, but certainly wanted to keep an eye on what they were doing with their superfectas and this, you know, attempt to find, you know, a bet, each venue seemingly trying to attract interest by, you know, slashing takeout. And outstanding, the 15% superfecta take at Emerald. And obviously it's one night, you know, one evening of racing, so it's hard to, you know, you're not going to make any determinations. However, I did go look at their May and June. You know, they didn't run midweek. They ran weekends, Friday, Saturday, Sundays at Emerald last year. But I looked at mid-May and mid-June Friday cards, and it sure looks like they did more business on these supers than they did last year. That's just at a quick glance. 12,000, this is through 10 races yesterday, 12,000, 11,000, 10-7, 18-5, 14-2, 18-1, 15-even, 16-even, 23-8, and 23-7. And a lot of their super pools last year were, you know, the early in the card, 7, 8, 9,000, then mid-card, 10, 12, 14, 15, and then an occasional, you know, 20. But this looked, just at a glance, like they had a nice start at Emerald last night. And I didn't see the total. They didn't necessarily have a total number. But anyway, so while we're also in the Pacific Northwest, because I kind of, you know, tongue-in-cheek, wanted people to be aware that Pocatello yesterday, well, the 25,000 Futurity final yesterday, a little bit of an upset. Fortune's Wild Blood. Congratulations to Jay Pitcher and owners Kyle and Kelly Cook. Louisiana-bred gelding. Fortune's Wild Blood at 9-1. Upset the 3-5 favorite, and it wasn't close. Beat him by half length, which in which in quarter horse racing is like four lengths. And Monte Oroso won the Maiden Frolic Stake with Game Stealer, 3-1, second choice. So there's a little Pocatello. A couple of things also following up from Thistledown and what transpired with that situation Tuesday. I reached out to Dr. Gorham, to Bob Gorham, and we know Dr. Gorham back to his days in, as, you know, leading trainer in Michigan, and, you know, as the Michigan scene receded, he you know, came down into, you know, the upper Midwest and does a great job. He called in the scratch to the racing office, to his usual racing office clerk, and absolutely told the clerk that Swift Punch was out and Charged With Intent was running. And that was even confirmed later in the morning. So the racing office absolutely had the right scratch, and from the statement from Jason Wilson yesterday at Equibase Jockey Club, that seemed to be confirmed that this was a punching error, a human error, on the side of Equibase. And as I said yesterday, you get this, you know, four or five times a year, and very frequently, you know, the confusion is easy. When it comes to entries. So an unfortunate human error, as the saying goes. When it comes to human, I won't call it error. We'll call it rider aggression. How about that scene yesterday in the second at Parks? Tony Black will address it. Tony reached out to me, actually, even before I asked him about it. Yesterday afternoon, he sent me a note. He said that that was, you know, obviously the DQ was warranted. And there's even some discussion, you know, that Hector Caballero might have been, you know, deserved to have been disqualified. It, crazy chain reaction situation with Adam Bowman on the leader, on Wenzel, and bumps Asbury Ave, who bumps a Fleet Melody, and then they get tangled up, Caballero and Flores. They end up tangled up, and then poor Inspired Options out on the outside. I mean, was kind of coming in a little bit and gets careened. Jeremy Laprida, he gets sort of pinballed. And then, you know, Caballero had his stick stuck, and crazy, crazy scene. And, you know, I for some reason, people seemed aghast and outraged. About what? The horses, you know, you had a bumping incident and a chain reaction, and you know, the guys are, it's funny, do you want them to be competitive, or do you want them to be passive and okay, I'm just going to hold my course here, and I don't know, I don't know what are guys supposed to do out there. So Tony, you'll let Tony talk about it. He certainly he certainly can tell you. And if you haven't seen it, you got to. I'll see if I can't find. There's a terrific loop of it, which, you know, shows the. It must be about six strides, but yeah, about five or six jumps where they're just bouncing off each other, and you know, it's not the first time that you've seen it. You know, a jock. You know, he's kind of, it looks visually like he's pushing off, but Caballero said that essentially his stick got, you know, got stuck in there, and he was looking to pull it out. Ends up, you know, 60-1 too. That was an aside on all this, was that Asbury Ave, the Louis Colasso trainee, Bellamy Road gelding, that was actually bred by the University of Kentucky. I always love that when you get those college breeding programs, and this is a four-year-old gelding, Asbury Ave, breaks the maiden at 60-1. So the crazy scene, and Tony'll talk about it in a little bit. Today, let me give you the rundown. We're going to talk to Kip Elser next. In fact, Kip is going to join us here to kick it off. And day one yesterday of the Breeze Show at Timonium. And, of course, next Monday and Tuesday, the rescheduled Mid-Atlantic spring sale, two-year-old, now the Mid-Atlantic early summer sale, I guess, right? And we're going to check in with Kip. He had a very good day, and he looks like he's got some really interesting offerings, actually. And he's also got a nice variety of state bred programs. He's got a little bit of everything, including a Minnesota bred, for those of you, the Canterbury fans. He's got three New York breds, three Louisiana breds, two Pennsylvania breds, a Minnesota bred, a Maryland bred, and nine Kentucky breds. So I'm going to talk to Kip, see what the scene is like there, and what kind of attendance for the Breeze Show. And, you know, those that either got turned away or didn't get to fulfill their orders, or just chose not to go down to OBS, the travel side of things that is a little, you know, is still a little tenuous, let's be honest. Not everybody is jumping on planes. So We'll catch up with Kip next. In addition, Dick Powell, speaking of Charlton / Boston Spa, we'll talk to Dick, see if Dick has seen. Tina looked up this morning, and that moose, apparently, and baby, they've been seen by quite a few people in the Boston region. So we'll talk to Dick as Hong Kong can really, you can see the wire, and we'll get the latest. We'll also get his postscript as well to Royal Ascot. And we talked last Thursday with Dick, right in the midst of it. Tony Black, as I mentioned, Steve Haskin, Rich Eng, and I did want to get a call in to Bob Tiller, too. A reminder that today you do have that stake at Woodbine and the return in the Jacques Cartier. The group three, grade three, the return of Pink Lloyd, the amazing Pink Lloyd, the amazing Kip Elser, Kirkwood Stables, joins us. Kip, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Great to be with you.
Great to catch up, and wanted to get a sale report in. Tomorrow we'll be doing weekend preview, and then Monday and Tuesday they're going to go through the ring. And you and so many of the consigners that had to readjust their schedule, Kip, explain how it's affected you.
Well, with the Gulfstream sale that we were aiming quite a few of these horses for our Gulfstream Gallop program was obviously canceled, and those horses are pushed back into this sale. It's later in the year, so they're on the way to getting ready to go to the races, so they are going to breeze here. And then we've got our usual group that kind of late developers or state-bred colts and fillies that are here with the normal Timonium group that's postponed from the Preakness weekend in May. So it's a little bigger group than usual because of everything getting pushed together, but it's a good, solid, across-the-board group of horses.
Flesh out for a second, Kip, and expand, because we've talked to you each year as the Gallop concept, and you and a client initiated it. The idea of, particularly when it came to late February, early March, and the old Calder sale, the Gulfstream Fasig Tipton sale, the idea of galloping the horses. This is also something that Adina Springs tried maybe 10 years ago. And, the concept was to get a group that is on the verge of tightening and serious training, but that aren't demanded to run an eighth of a mile or a quarter of a mile in a fashion that they're never going to be asked to again. And you got to admire the stick-to-itiveness involved here, because this is the third winter.
This would have been the third year. We've had some really good results on the track with a couple of graded class horses, and they're, with a couple of exceptions, they're winning. But it was not to be this year, and we didn't feel that we could just keep galloping on into May and June. Now it's time to step it up a little bit and start breezing and get them ready to go to the races. That's what we're supposed to be doing.
I should notice, because I looked at the catalog, and there's the Gulfstream Gallop, and then there's also the Midway Gallop. Is this a second client that got involved in the galloping concept?
No, the first client decided he wanted to keep on doing his own thing, and some guys, including Joe Miller and Mike Michelson from Midway, wanted to put a group together to do the same thing. So that's there's two different groups,
right,
of horses.
Very nice. So the concept essentially, you know, burgeoning. How did the timeout benefit you? I talked to Joe Applebaum a few weeks ago at OBS, and, you know, the assumption is that, you know, certain horses that you may have had to have put on pause, that may have had some baby issues, you know, clearly benefited from this. And of course, there's also the potential, you know, as horses are essentially being kept, you know, in race ready fashion, that, you know, things can have setbacks. You know, how did it affect your group?
Well, I think, you know, across the board, it's about a wash. Some have had a chance to develop a little bit more, and then some sort of did a little bit too much or needed some time, and we've got some outs here. But, you know, across the board, the net effect is not too much. We've got two and a half months more of training bills in all these horses. But, you know, if we go ahead and get them sold for reasonable money, which, you know, there's going to be some really, really good value here. And I think it's going to be a good, solid market now that racing is back up nearly everywhere. Top class horses, the Gulfstream group, they're all doing well, and they should attract the top end and the various different state breds. You know, they're here to be bread and butter horses for the guys that race other places and need to win races with a little subsidy with them.
A couple of things, too, that the extra time provides, I suppose. Did you get any favorable updates from racing siblings?
We haven't got anything really dramatic, but we have had a few siblings break their maiden and start up the ladder. Actually, as far as sire power goes, Daredevil has come alive since the earlier with his fillies, since the earlier sale would have been. So that's a plus. But, you know, other than that, on the bottom side of the pedigrees, there hasn't been anything grade one or anything like that. But they're going out there and winning their share. Street Sense is having a great year that we would have missed had we sold in March at Gulfstream. So that's all a plus.
Hmm. You bring up Daredevil, and the corollary is that he's taken off as soon as they exported him.
Yeah,
that's all it takes. It's a magic.
You know, Declaration of War had a nice winner for West Point the other day at Belmont. That was nice, and American Pharoah is continuing his march. So yeah, I think some of these horses are starting to step up.
Let's talk about first the ones that breezed yesterday. We got 3 days of breeze show. Today, day two. Tomorrow, day three. And then a couple of days of perusal. And we'll talk about how much traffic and how many people are in the stands at Timonium. But talk about yesterday, because it sure looked like that Louisiana bred filly, the half hours filly. 21-2, and you had a hard-spun filly as well that was going to be part of the Gallup group, 21-4. Those two really zipped. And then a Tonalist filly, 22-1, a New York bred, and the Tappet colt out of Jackpot Joni that is expected to be a top seller.
Yeah, the Tappet colt is he's just a really nice, sound, good-looking Tappet colt. He could probably go that pace twice around. He's not going to go in 10 and change or 21 coming off of this turn, but when they get going farther on a big long racetrack, he's going to get his chance to shine. The Tonalist filly is quite a bit the same way. She's a New York bred and going to be going long later in the year. the hard-spun filly, I think she can do just about anything. And then you back up to the quickest of yesterday's group is the half hours. And like I talked about earlier, she's got a state-bred program behind her, just a very quick, sound filly.
And I'm just looking at the pages, and in fact, that Tappet colt, Second Dam, includes Summerlee, the wonderful Summerlee, and the dam, as it is, the dam has had five other foals, all are winners, and also includes a productive filly that got Flapjack, the Jack Sisterson trainee that I'm waiting for a stake win from. That Louisiana bred too. There's plenty of power in there. Nice group, and you talk about the hard spun, who just gets nothing but runners. Talk about today and the Friday group, because you hinted the declaration of war, colt. Late on Friday, the American Pharaoh, New York bred filly, in here. You want to talk about a hot sire coming out of OBS. What about the Spitester filly?
The Spitester filly is very, very quick. Actually, we did have a little bit of a mix up in the office, and she was mistakenly scratched for a while, so I just want to let everybody know that 333, the Spitester Philly, Pennsylvania bred, is back in the sale, or always was in the sale. Anyway, I think all the errors are fixed up, and she's here and will breeze tomorrow. Like I said, The Street Sense filly comes from a really, really good family. He's having a good year. Declaration of War, big solid colt, and the West Point colt won at Belmont Day. American Pharaoh, and she's just she's something. I really think she's special, and has a state bred program behind her too. So it's a very good group. Vancouver had his first winner the other day. He's a first year sire. He was a champion in Australia and a grade one winning 2 year old, son of Medaglia d'Oro, with a good family. I think he's gonna bloom this year over here. I think it's a shame he's not coming back from Australia, but he's doing extremely well with his first crop over there.
Let me ask you too, Kip. The big names, they speak for themselves and they advertise themselves. Familiarize listeners and prospective buyers with a horse like Mosler, that is less known, is got mid-Atlantic foals all over the place, and in some cases probably Virginia certified or Delaware certified. But you got a Maryland bred filly, as well as a Pennsylvania bred filly, the Moslers, and you've also got a Leia Man from the first crop, a New York bred colt.
Well, that's a group that we usually bring up here, is the ones that can get a little boost from their local programs, wherever it may be. Pennsylvania's back running again. They have some purse bumps for the PA breds. New York has some, and Leia Band stands up there, so they've got some extra stallion bonuses up there. The Moslers, not only Maryland bred, but because he stands here eligible for the Maryland Million, everybody needs a little something extra. If you're not going to be aiming for Saturday at 5 o'clock, you need a little bit of extra to just help keep everything ticking over.
And we've had so much fun when it came to Virginia, particular when they were trying to remember, you know, the conversations we've had with Deb Easter and the Virginia Certification Program, which became a huge success. And there's a number of Virginia Certifieds in the sale. And you talk about the Maryland Million eligibility for, you know, which is a SIRE program. Some people don't realize that, but you've got these combinations, you know, where the certification horses then, you know, they're eligible for bonuses pretty much anywhere they run on the Eastern Seaboard, from New York, you know, down obviously to Virginia. A Minnesota bred, I had to mention that because we've been having Canterbury conversations, and a Golden Sense colt. Invariably, it seems, Golden Sense getting, you know, getting nice ones. The breezes today, right, the colt?
Yes, he breezes in about a half an hour, as a matter of fact. He's a very tough, solid little horse. He actually looks like Brett Calhoun's colt did as a yearling. But he's very quick and solid. He'll fit right in anywhere, but especially up there.
No doubt. And on that topic, what kind of an audience is on hand? And you know, traffic wise, I mean, it, you know, you still have got plenty of people that are watching, you know, video, and then will come this weekend and stay through the sale. Give us a feel, Kip, for, you know, for the kind of buyers and the traffic that's on the grounds.
Yeah, I think we've got the usual number of people here watching. Agents, a few local trainers, most of the non-local guys will be able to make a day trip out of coming over here. They won't have to get on an airplane or they won't have to stay in a motel. A lot of guys drove over from Kentucky. So, you know, with all that's been going on, this location has a lot of advantages. And the sales company is doing quite a bit as far as the sanitation and social distancing and the online and phone bidding. I think it's going to go very well.
Well, day two of the Breeze Show, and you can watch on several different platforms, including Fasig Tipton's website and Bloodhorse and DRF, and then, you know, the video is on the catalog, and Kip's got the entire consignment listed as well at his website. And Kip, going to be watching and wishing everybody, you and everybody, the, you know, a good sale. And you know, got to get some more 2-year-olds in the pipeline here. That's been, you know, something that has been a, you know, an after effect of this, is just, you know, you can't have, you know, full slates of 2-year-old racing when they're, you know, when they haven't been distributed yet.
Well, that's exactly right. But you know, we need some inventory off our books, and yeah, trainers need some stock to lead over there and win some races.
Exactly right. Kip Elser, everybody, KirkwoodStables.com, and he's got at the top of his website, you want to see the full roster of Kip's inventory, and it's all right there, including videos and also earlier gallop information and the catalog page. Kip, I appreciate this, and good luck today. I've always got it going in the background when we're doing the show, when there's Breeze shows, and you know, always rooting for you.
Well, thanks so much, and let's talk again soon, either on the phone or better yet, if anybody comes down to visit and look at some horses.
Absolutely. Which barn are you in?
We're on the west side of C and the east side of D, so we've made a courtyard out of it.
Kip Elser, everybody, KirkwoodStables.com, and you can also, of course, follow Kip on Twitter as well, and be watching for his horses. Kirkwood Stables is Kip's moniker as well at Twitter. Kip, good luck, and you know, I want to say we'll see you at Saratoga, and you know, we're up in the air about how that's going to come off, but I think there'll be plenty of people here, even though there's not going to be a sale. I'm sure if you have the opportunity, you're going to make the trip.
Absolutely. I would love to be there. It's still the best
Kip Elser,
everybody, all year in the country.
Kip Elser, folks, Kirkwood Stables, and a very nice, varied group, including nine Kentucky breds, and then another 10 regional program, New York breds, Pennsylvania, Louisiana, Maryland, and Minnesota. We love it. Kip Elser, folks. Kip, go get them, and we'll see you soon. We're going to stay right here. Dick Powell's going to join us, and reach out for Dick Case, if you would. Going to look through Kip's New York bred group. He's got a Tonalist, and the Leoban I mentioned, and the American Pharoah Filly is going to be a big number, actually. That'll be a big price, undoubtedly. Take a look, actually, while we wait for Dick. You know, one complication. I just got a text from one of our partners, from Tony Montanino, and Tony was alarmed yesterday. He was looking forward to coming up to Saratoga. He lives in North Carolina. He's well known as North Carolina Tony. So he's a little alarmed about you know, Connecticut, New York, creating this 14-day quarantine for people, you know, that are coming out of Corona hotspots. So Tony's a little deflated this morning because he was looking forward to coming up, but he says that they're threatening $10,000 fines. Holy cow! All right, Tony, you may have to watch the racing. I'm afraid I didn't realize that. That is. You know, this came up 2 weeks ago with Seth Merrow, who wanted to go to Maine, even though he sold the house out from under us, and they had the same thing, that unless you were from Vermont or New Hampshire, you were going to have to quarantine. And Tina said she saw a thing where hotels are essentially locking you in your room if you show up, and like if you come, you have one of those key cards, and they're programming it so that you can only literally use it like once, and that you're locked in your hotel room. We're not, you know, and here's Dick to join us. I guess, you know, you can understand that. We've in this region and in New York overall have done a good job, and compliance is, you know, it's uniform. I mean, everybody's wearing masks in the stores, and it seems to be working. And we haven't been any New York Karens. Dick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, up until couple of weeks ago, anytime you went to a doctor, they would go through the questioning, including, have you been to New York City and have you been in contact with anyone from New York City? So they, I mean, this is within New York boundaries, but they still wanted to know, had you been down there, anyone come up and visit you? No threats or penalties or forced quarantines or anything. That seems a little draconian, to say the least, but I don't know.
Well, in the meantime, we had a Belmont experience that came off well, and just looking ahead to, you know, these two weekends of racing, and you know, will be on top of us. They wrap up downstate July 12th and start up here on the 16th. So Saratoga goes forward, and we'll see about, you know, the owners. I keep telling everybody that they're doing everything. They're considering every possible machination to, you know, start at some point with owners able to attend. And from there, you know, I think we're at the mercy of, you know, the, what are we at, stage four in terms of, you know, the progress. And I still, Dick, feel like, I know you were negative. You were predicting no Saratoga. So now we have to turn our attention to hopefully getting some people in, you know, Monmouth style. Monmouth is going to be able to, July 3rd, open with, you know, with patron attendance. So, and it seems to be going okay in several venues around the country. I think as long as people, you know, are responsible about it, it'll be okay.
Did you see the press release that just came out from Churchill Downs?
I may not have. Tell me.
They're going to have fans at the Derby. Going to be strictly controlled. Lots of details. No number. No percentage yet. I know the governor's supposed to come out with something. Excuse me. Very soon. But that there will be some level of fans. There'll be very strict restrictions on anyone on the backstretch. You know. Contact with people, no general admission sales that they used to do, what they used to call this whole walk around bracelet. If you want to do that, you got to go in the infield. And they'll soon be announcing how many people, what percentage of the capacity will be available, stuff like that. So, I mean, the dam is breaking with what you just mentioned with Monmouth, New Jersey, and now this, details to follow. And I'm guaranteeing that there'll be owners at Saratoga this year. And then the question is, it's an 8-week meet, so maybe the first 4 weeks there's no fans. Maybe from Travis week to the end it's going to have some level of fans. It's going to be hard to logistically pick. Like, I have 4 seats in the clubhouse every day. I mean, do I use every other seat? Are the people in behind me going to be there? You know, just how sparse will it be? But the outdoor areas, the picnic areas, and the apron and things like that, they should not necessarily be affected. You know, because it's been proven that the outdoors, this virus doesn't thrive. It thrives indoors or undercover. So, yeah, lots of decisions, lots of plans and protocols and everything else being put in place. And,
well, and I just found the press release from about 20 minutes ago, and just kind of thumbing through it. Nice. We'll reach out to Darren and maybe go through the tech list of what are the initial framework and all. You know, it's all logical stuff. This is not makes perfect sense when you see what's gone on. The after effects of the Memorial Day lunacy, and where there's resurgent, not just resurgent outbreaks, but also in some regions of the country, you know, really kind of first wave, you know, trickle down effect in other parts of the country that are dealing, you know, with it. So you just got to keep hoping that. You know, in the places where we've had progress and you know, things have, you know, certainly here, I mean, certainly, you know, on the Eastern Seaboard, there's been, you know, a tremendous turnaround. So just hope it keeps going in the right direction. Dick, before we talk about any Royal Ascot thoughts, aftermath from you, we look at Hong Kong, but don't know if you heard my early conversation about Tina's drive home last night between Charlton and Boston. Are you familiar with this moose and baby?
No, and I live West Milton, which is the next town. Well, it's actually before Galway. Charlton on the other side of 67. So,
right.
No, I mean, I'm sure I have, I mean, I have 15 acres, so I have just about everything. But not a moose, not to my knowledge, but not surprised either.
Keep an eye out. Tina looked it up and said been spotted. She had an encounter last night, and she's just thankful the thing that the mother chose not to cross the road. And she was coming home from Rochester. And at the same time, she was very excited. She's always wanted to see. Always wanted to see a moose, except when you do see them, it's invariant. It's pretty unnerving because they're prehistoric. Dick, before we talk Hong Kong, give us the final assessment from your view. Royal Ascot, we really enjoyed it last week.
Well, the turf conditions were way worse than. Certainly I realized, because they kept saying good to soft. Well, it was soft. It wasn't anywhere near good. When you look at the racing post, they always give you how many seconds slow by. Most of the races are slow by seven seconds, even going a mile. I mean, just so the ground was really bad. Now, John Gosden, the morning of the Gold Cup on Thursday, he was still not committed to running Stradivarius because of the ground. And finally he decided, you know, we're here, we'll take a shot, Frankie will protect the horse if he's not handling it. Well, he handled it pretty good. He just romped for his third straight Ascot Gold Cup. But the ground was very soft. It led to some unusual results on occasion, not always. I mean, Battleground won, Stradivarius won. I mean, you did have favorites coming in. But it was very soft ground. I think the highlight was you picking Onassis in the Sandringham Stakes on Thursday afternoon at 33-1 with Haley Turner. That was fantastic. And Friday was Frankie and Gosden again in the Hardwick Stakes with Fanny Logan. Golden Horde wins the Commonwealth Cup Group 1 with Clef Cox and Adam Kirby riding, and they came back to win another one. Santiago won the Queen's Vase, going a mile and three quarters for Aidan O'Brien and Ryan Moore. The Queen had a winner early in the week. Saturday, Wesley Ward got Campanelli, not on the front end as many expected, and on the softer ground, you know, I wasn't expecting her to run that well, and she did. So she was very, very good. The ground had firmed up by Saturday a little bit. And then in the Coventry Stakes, we had, I don't know, it might have been the biggest upset or biggest priced horse ever to win at Ascot, Nando Perendo. So once again, Adam Kirby and Clive Cox, they win at 150-1. So there were some bizarre races sharing. She was a good second. She wasn't really threatening, but she had to go to the outside, and Alpine Star with Frankie came up the inside, saved the ground. Beater. The same thing basically happened in the St. James Palace with Pinatubo, who never really looked like he was going to win. He looked like he might get close. But Palace Pier, once again, with Frankie saving the ground, gets up. Frankie had just a brilliant meet. But it was great to see Kirby and Cox and Kevin Stott and Kevin Ryan winning multiple races. James Doyle winning races, Jim Crowley winning lots of races. Obviously, Shadwell won a ton of races. That was just amazing. And then the usual, you know, Galileos and See the Stars and those type of sires just killing it. And Batash is the best sprinter in the world at the moment, and he proved it once again. So you got to see the best sprinter and the best marathon horse. So kind of gave a little bit for everyone, but that ground in midweek was way softer than I realized. And now looking back, it's like, yeah, these times were really slow and way off. So I guess the extra races worked out. The handle figures were very, very strong. And I'm sure they'll do it again next year, pandemic or not.
Yeah, exactly. I enjoyed it as much or more than ever. And as I said to Nick Luck the other day, the the situation involving coverage or, you know, or no coverage because there wasn't the, you know, the sideshow, you know, involving the royal enclosure and the procession and all the other stuff. It really made the focus strictly on the racing. You know, and as an aside, Dick, I don't know what coverage you watched of Belmont Saturday, but I haven't brought this up yet. The ratings were predictably good. It was the most watched sporting event of the weekend, the Belmont. But the flip side of the Royal Ascot coverage without attendance to deal with versus apparently, and I, you know, I was mostly watching the Roberts feed from Belmont and with the opportunity to, you know, to switch over to, you know, watch races from Churchill and anywhere else.
Yep.
There was real anger and deservedly so that NBC blocks out the rights to you know, the coverage during a certain period, and then doesn't show a race. If you're going to lock up the broadcast transmission, you've got to show all the races. And I'm sorry, but apparently, while that seventh race was running, they were discussing the timing and spacing of Triple Crown events. Why is that even a topic? Why are you even wasting time with that? I understand that a New York bred turf sprint allowance isn't a priority in their minds, but you got to do something. You've got to do a picture in picture or something.
When it happened, I was I'm like bouncing around trying to find the race, and I went to a couple of
ADW sites. That's what everybody said.
That were also blacked out.
Yep.
I'm like,
yep.
Did they really what were they showing that was so important? That
they weren't apparently. Apparently, they were
disrupted.
Yeah.
Yeah. I. Listen, Royal Ascot was great because all the stuff I hate, they didn't show. Didn't exist. You know, the procession and all that. Believe me, I'm not a fan. So now, Royal Ascot was terrific. The Belmont coverage, I know it's not for me. And I know that I'm not the audience, the target audience, or anything else like that, which, all right, I get. But, I mean, occasionally can you show me some odds, or occasionally can you, like, show me some results, or... I don't know. I know they had 3 hours to fill, and I thought they spent too much time on the empty grandstand. It's empty. I get it. Next. Move on.
Yeah. I don't get it.
Let me ask you this quickly. When you watch Belmont, are you watching it on a direct feed from Roberts?
Yes.
Okay. Now, are you getting a paddock report or anything during that time?
They've got feeds. Yeah, they've got. I don't necessarily pull it up because what I take that multi view where you got the one big screen and then three little screens, and you know, typically I've had, you know, whatever the three. If it's a Saturday, you know, the major ovals, or I'll switch over to, you know, if somebody's got a stake coming up, etc. And you know, for $15 a month, I really haven't pressed this enough. The whole Roberts opportunity. You can use an RTN BYK and sign up for 5 free days, and you'll get a preview of what you're going to have with Roberts. And it's, you know, it's thoroughbred, standardbred, greyhound, international. I mean, every single conceivable oval that you can imagine is there for you, you know, 24/7. And when people started complaining, I was like, "What do you mean?" It didn't even occur to me that I'm watching it on Roberts, and that that on any of the ADW platforms that they were blacked out. I was even incredulous about that until enough people from enough corners of the planet complained.
Yeah. My issue, and I don't know if it's going to be like this permanently, but since Fox Sports resumed coverage, when I watched the Naira feed, just the straight Naira feed, I'm not getting a paddock report. I'm not getting. They finally started talking horses again after a couple of weeks of not having it.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's what people are watching in simulcast places. They're not getting Fox Sports. They're not getting that coverage. They're getting this coverage. And this coverage is kind of like your bread and butter. So I'm not sure why, if Maggie or someone's given a paddock report, why it can't be picked up by both of them. I'm sure there's rights issues and all the crazy behind-the-scenes stuff. But do you hear that background noise?
I don't.
I can't see it where I am, but we have the last couple of days we get these fighter jets doing maneuvers over here. And the other day it was just about to rain and it was really cloudy, and you couldn't see them. They're right above the clouds. I don't know if it's more than one. And this jet just keeps flying, doing maneuvers, and which is odd because we're on the descent path to Saratoga Airport. I get all the jets fly, right over my house. So sorry if it sounds like I live at LaGuardia or something. But
that's funny. I can remember being at Colgate, and there would be maneuvering aircraft from the. Up at Rome,
Griffiths
Air Force Base. Yes, exactly. And that was the 80s, so it was still late 70s and 80s. So there was plenty of it was we were still in duck and cover mode. Well, Dick, let me move from Belmont and Royal Ascot to Hong Kong, and boy, I suppose, Dick, we're gonna move seamlessly from Hong Kong straight into Presque Isle in mid July. But in the meantime, how about Hong Kong the last few days?
Hong Kong, we're down to six more cards, four at Shaotan, two at Happy Valley. Last Saturday were the last two graded stake races, group stake races, the Premier Cup, won by Jolly Banner. Matthew Poon rode it, 7 furlongs, 120.89. The Premier Plate was Dances with Dragons. This was an interesting story. Blazing fast, 9 furlong time, 145.84. Keith Jung rode for Casper Founds. Keith Jung had only one win in 7 months. I mean, there's ice cold, and then there's one win in 7 months. And yet, Casper stayed with him. He rode the horse flawlessly, and he's a competent rider. I don't know why his business has dried up so bad. So he gets to win. Dances with Dragons is 4-for-6 from switching to Casper Founds' barn. So those were the highlights of the two stake races. 4 out of 11 favorites won. Karis Teton was the riding star with 3 winners. Yesterday morning, they went to Happy Valley. More likely 2 out of 9 favorites, which is kind of typical for Happy Valley. Going into the last four races, Zach Purton did not have a win. Vincent Ho won the second race, and something happened with Vincent Ho. They said, is that chest pain? But I don't know what was causing it, but the stewards would not let him ride. Well, amazingly, Zach Purton did not have mounts in race 7 and 8, so he picks up Vincent Ho's rides, and Zach winds up winning race 6, 7, 8, and 9, all for Francis Liu. So they wound up winning 4 straight races together. They sweep the last 4 races of the card. So two of them weren't even, two of them were races where he didn't even have a mount. He winds up picking up catch rides because everyone else is committed. And it turns out both of the mounts were live. So Zach wins four. Joe had a winner early in the card. So Zach is now seven ahead, 136 to 129 over Joe in the Riders' Championship. Karis Keaton's at 84. Joe has 27 more mounts, so it's not because Zach's getting more mounts. At Happy Valley, Zach has 58 winners. Joe has 36. I mean, that's a huge edge for Zach. And he came up the inside yesterday in race six to win. I mean, he was just riding brilliantly. And so he's now seven ahead with six cards to go. Still not clinched by any means or anything else like that. But the trainer's title has really tightened up with Ricky Yu only having one winner in the last couple of days of racing. Francis Liu with four on Sunday. So Ricky Yu has 61. Francis Liu has 59. Tony Cruz is at 57. So that really tightened up. But amazing to see four straight wins with the same jock and trainer to finish up the card. That doesn't happen very often in Hong Kong. Saturday, not Sunday, Saturday we're racing. 1 o'clock Eastern Time, a.m., 10 o'clock Pacific Time, Friday night, for a 10-race card. Seven turf, race 1, 5, and 8 are on the all-weather. And I'm only going to give out one pick this time. It's going to be race number 10. This is a class 2, 80 to 100. The favorite who I really like is number 1, Buddies. But he draws post 14. So even with the weight off with Jerry Chow, and Chow's ridden him before, I just can't go with him from post 14 going 7 furlongs. I know he's fast enough to work out some kind of trip, but I just see him using too much energy to do so. I'm going to go with number 3, Happy Fun. Danny Shum, Zach Purton, has lots of back class, has run very well at this class level, gets 6 pounds in weight concession from the top choice. He draws post 10, but he should be able to sit behind Beauty Applause, number 8, and number 1, Buddies, and I think he can work out a trip stalking and hopefully be the strong horse in the stretch. Also, removing blinkers, that's a big thing that I neglected to mention. So Happy Fun, number 3, race 10. Our pick for Saturday at Hong Kong. Pat Cummings had a really nice story on Hong Kong, where he goes over this trio of wagering enhancements, as he said. So on the Thoroughbred Idea Foundation, Pat has a nice story on some changes they're going to make for next year's Hong Kong betting.
Cool. I owe Pat a call. I wanted him to come on and talk about a couple of things. And we'll do that, you know what? Well, not tomorrow's Friday, but all right, we'll do that next week. Maybe we'll actually, you know what? That's a good idea, Dick. We'll tie in his visit to the with that news.
Right.
All right. Super. Dick, I appreciate it. You know, get out there with the binoculars and watch for moose.
Look for the moose, look for the fighter jets, look for it. It's very exciting.
They'll keep you busy. I love it. Dick Powell, everybody. HKJC Racing. Be well, and we'll talk next week. Let's take a quick break. We got lots to do. Tony Black, Steve Haskin, Rich Eng. I also want to reach out. Gosh, I had a bunch of other possible conversations. We'll see if we can't feather in a few other things. All right. So you wonder what I do in those 2.5 minutes during a break. It's tap dance and figure out. All right. Back after this, either Tony or perhaps a quick Louisville sojourn. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
Of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.